14. The morning was warm and bright, but not too bright, and there was enough of a breeze to keep the heat down. The sky was clear of fog. It stretched out, blue and uniform, on and on, forever, without end. Barbara walked aimlessly along the path, between the great towers and buildings of the company. She walked with her hands behind her back, gazing around her. Today she had put on short pants, short corduroy pants, deep red in color. Sandals were on her feet. A bright scarf was around her neck, a swath of color above her gray blouse and wide leather belt. She was all by herself. Carl had gone by her window before she had even got up, whistling and skipping along. Headed off down the road, vanishing between the buildings, his whistle dying away in the distance. She had lifted the shade and watched him until he was out of sight. Then she had jumped out of bed and dressed quickly. She hurried down to the commissary as soon as she was finished. No one was there. Both Vern and Carl had eaten and gone. In the sink were dirty dishes and bits of Vern's pipe ashes. Barbara carefully washed the dishes and cleaned up the kitchen. That was all the chores she could think of. Her room was clean and swept. She had even picked some new flowers and thrown the little roses out. Now she walked happily along, going nowhere in particular, taking deep breaths of the warm air, filling her lungs with the smell of the clean new day. The sun danced around her, from bits of mica in the path, from the roofs of buildings, from windows half boarded up. From all sides, sunlight danced and streamed. She felt good. She increased her pace. Presently, as she walked along, she realized that she was coming to the company park. The park was in the center of the grounds. Here a wide lawn had been planted, paths laid, trees arranged, so that the appearance of nature was given among all the machinery, the excavations, all the refining and smelting processes that had gone on day and night. Barbara came to the lawn and stopped, gazing across it. It was a perfect lawn. No weeds grew in it. And at the far border flowers had been carefully planted in low rows, endless bright streamers of color, red and blue and orange and every other color there was. She paused for a moment, hesitating. Then she hopped up onto the lawn and walked quickly across it. Some mounds of clover grew here and there. Bees buzzed around the clover, getting at the moisture inside. Barbara skirted around the mounds of clover, avoiding them. She came to the low rows of flowers and stepped over them. Beyond the flowers was a narrow path, and beyond the path was the company lake. The lake was a basin of concrete, huge and round, set like a gigantic pie pan among the flowers, laid down and filled with warm water. The water sparkled blue in the sun, shimmering and dancing. Barbara crossed the narrow path to the very edge of the lake. She stepped up on the concrete rim, her hands on her hips, gazing across the lake to the other side. On the other side were trees, a grove of immense fir trees, planted in a careful straight line, each one of them trimmed exactly like the next. It was nice, very nice, even though it was somewhat artificial. Everything was so perfect. The lake was round, exactly round. The trees were in exact formation. Even the flowers had been planted with care, according to innate geometrical concepts. Clover had got into the grass, but except for that. Yet it was better than clanking machines and the smell of molten metals and slag. All day long the factories had clanked and whirred. The roar of the blast furnaces, the unnatural charring heat. Furnaces withered life, machinery devoured and destroyed, scooped up and burned away everything. The little oasis was much better than that. Barbara stood for a long time, gazing across the lake. A slight wind blew, bringing a fine mist from the water up into the air. The wind increased, and the mist moved across the water in a great sheet. It touched her, the sheet of fine mist, and she found it cool and exciting. She looked around to see if anyone were watching. How foolish! She was alone. She was as completely alone as the first person in the world. And she had this tiny bit of the Garden of Eden to herself. In front of her was the dancing lake, the surface moving with the wind. Above her was the sun and sky. Behind her, the flowers and grass. She was surrounded by the garden, cut off, isolated completely from the rest of the world, if such existed. Here she was free to do what she wished. There was no one to watch her, frowning and noticing, no one to scowl and be offended, to sneer and make fun of her, to know and remember what she had done. She could run. She could dance, the way Carl had danced along the path in front of her. She had been ashamed to join him then, but she could dance now. There was no one to see. Barbara turned, gazing all around her, her heart beating with excitement. She could leap and run. She could destroy if she wanted. She could dig up plants, trample the grass. She could push over the trees, break the flowers, scoop out the water, pick up the great pie plate and empty all the water out onto the ground. There was nothing she could not do, nothing at all. Barbara sat down on the concrete rim of the lake. The concrete was hot, baked by the sun. She could feel it through her clothes. She untied her sandals rapidly, her hands shaking. She placed the sandals carefully on the rim beside her and then dangled her feet down into the blue water. The water was cold, much colder than she had thought it would be. She gave a little cry, shuddering and pulling back, but it was good. Presently, she slid off the rim and waded out into the water, kicking water high in the air. The water came back down in great drops, heavy and cool, splashing around her, into her hair, onto her blouse. It made her tremble from head to foot. She began to shake with an intense fever. The icy drops rolled down her bare arms. The water lapped against her legs. Where the water touched, it was like the touch of chilly fire. She splashed back to shore. Standing back on the concrete rim, she gazed up at the sun and across the water. Before, she had imagined herself as a sun goddess, giving her heart to the sun. Here she could do even more than that. She could give her whole self, her entire self, not merely her heart. She could give all of herself to the sun and the water and the black ground around her. She could be absorbed into the ground, back into the soil, like the rain that collects in puddles and finally drains away, sucked down into the earth. She could dissolve herself. Part of her would turn into the trees, part of her would enter the lake, part the sky, the sun, the grass. She would be lost here in this garden, where no one could see her or follow her or know her. She would be gone. She would run away, run so fast she would disappear and be gone, vanished into the garden. She would become a portion of the garden, and no one would know which portion was she and which was not. Barbara unbuttoned her blouse and slipped out of it. She unfastened her belt and stepped out of her short pants, laying them carefully on the narrow path beside the rim of the lake. Quickly she reached up for the sun, stretching out her arms, standing on tiptoe. But the sun was too far. She reached down to the water, bending over. The water was not so far. It was quite near. Barbara entered the water, moving out, away from the shore. The water came to her eagerly, lapping around her, at her knees and ankles. She unhooked her bra and tossed it back with her other clothes, beside the concrete rim. Then she stepped rapidly out of her pants. She wadded the little silk pants up and threw them back onto the path. Now she was naked, completely naked from head to foot. She ran through the cold water, splashing it against her thighs and hips, against her flat belly. She ran as far as she could, and then, when the water was up to her waist, she dived into it, letting it cover her completely. Barbara lay in the water, drifting and floating. She was losing herself into it. The water was taking her. She would be gone forever. She was melting away, merging with the landscape. She dropped her feet, standing up. The water reached to her breasts. She looked down at them. The sun had refused them when they had been offered to him, but the water would accept them. She could feel the water pressing against them, asking for them. It was begging for her whole body. And if the sun would not accept, then she was sorry for him. He had lost out, and for him it was too late. She moved out farther, gasping for breath, shuddering and splashing. The water was sucking at her breasts, nursing at them. It desired to have them. It was eager. It could not wait. It wanted her now, at once. It could not be put off. She stretched herself out on the water and lay, floating and drifting, moving with the slight current set in motion by the wind. Now she was giving herself, all of her, without reservation. She was giving herself to the water, and the vast blue water was taking her eagerly. The water desired her. It was flowing into her, lapping into her, coming into her ears and nose, into her eyes and mouth. She opened her mouth and torrents of water rushed in. The water was bursting wildly into her, filling her up, swelling into her body. The water wanted to get inside her. It was pushing in greedily, too greedily. It was lustful. It was destroying her.
Stop!
She gasped for breath, choking and panting. She struggled to her feet, her toes barely touching bottom. Terrified, she pushed toward shore, wading toward the far rim of concrete. The water sank down. Finally, it was down to her waist. Water poured from her, splashing from her. She stopped, coughing and retching. The water was bitter, strong. She shuddered, spitting water, dribbling water from her nose. Water dribbled down her face in a dark stream. Her hair, soaked and dripping, hung down in her face. She pushed it back. She was sick, sick and shaken, and frightened. Barbara made her way to shore. What had she been doing? In another minute, she might have drowned. She was all by herself. There would be no one around to save her. A few minutes more, and it would have been over. She shook, gasping, pushing her hair back out of her eyes. She reached the concrete rim and stepped shakily over it, onto the warm path. She made her way through the flowers and threw herself onto the grass. She was exhausted. She lay without moving, her eyes shut, feeling the warm ground under her, the firm earth. Finally, she sat up, some strength coming back into her. She got unsteadily to her feet and walked over to her clothes. She was still wet. Her hair was slimy and thick, heavy and shapeless with water. She tried to squeeze the water out of it. Bubbles came to the surface of her hair. She gave up and began to put her clothes on. She dressed slowly, feeling the cloth cling to her wet skin. Above her, the sun was white and blinding. She blinked. Her head ached. When she had finished dressing, she hurried away from the lake, through the flowers, across the grass, away from the garden itself. She came to the path and stopped, her chest rising and falling, gasping for breath. She had tried to give herself up to the earth and the sky, and she had not succeeded. The sun had refused her. He was too distant and aloof. He had not wanted her. He had not been interested enough to come and possess her and carry her away. She had given herself to what was below, the water and the ground. The water had covered her and rushed greedily to take her, but it had been cruel and demanding, destructive. It cared only about itself, not about her. It would have filled her up and killed her. She would have been destroyed. The water in its lust to enter her would have broken her apart. She had been too quick to approach it. She had made a mistake. She had not understood it correctly. It was dangerous to misunderstand. She had to be more careful, much more careful. The next time she would know what she was giving herself to. She would not rush heedlessly forward to be devoured and destroyed. The next time she would be sure. The next one who took her would not destroy her. She would make certain of that. It had happened too many times. It would not happen again. Barbara looked back at the lake and the dark soil around the flowers and grass. She had come from such things, billions of years before. She had slid forth from the water and the sun and the ground as a microscopic jelly, and each generation she had been recreated from the microscopic jelly. But once having come into existence, she could not go back. This world, the machines, the chimneys, the heaps of slag, the hearths, the furnaces, the towers, the concrete buildings, the smell of molten metal, this world could not be escaped. She was part of it, and whether she liked it or not, she had to remain with it. She could not go back. If this world had been abandoned, if it were of no value or significance any longer, if it had been deserted to rust and rot to be picked over by the new owners, then she must go along with it and rust and rot too, and lie out among the other piles of useless and discarded objects to be ridden over and crushed under by what was to come later, whatever it might be. Barbara turned to go, away from the grass and the flowers and the great pie pan. But suddenly, she stopped. She put her hand quickly up, shielding her eyes. Something had moved. Something among the trees at the far side of the lake. A brief flicker. She continued to watch, feeling her wet hair dripping cold, thick water down the back of her neck, inside her blouse. Had she been mistaken? No. There it was again, a flash of white among the trees, as if a person had stepped for a moment out into the sun, as if the sun had shrunk his shirt. Barbara walked carefully along the grass, circling the lake. The grass ended after a while, and she entered the grove of fir trees. The ground was dry and hard, covered by a thin layer of leaves and cones and needles. She felt the leaves crunch under her sandals as she tiptoed quietly from tree to tree, holding her breath, trying not to make any noise. A person was standing ahead of her, between two of the great trees, standing with his hands on his hips, gazing off across the lake. She knew who it was before she saw his face. That morning he had passed her window in the same white shirt, skipping and whistling along.
"What are you doing?"
Barbara said sharply. Carl turned slowly toward her.
"Hello."
"For God's sake, what are you doing?"
Carl studied her evenly.
"Was that you out in the water? I see you got to shore all right. I thought for a little while you were in some sort of trouble."
He did not seem embarrassed at all. Barbara felt confused. She shook her head, trying to clear it.
"If I had drowned, would you have pulled me out? Or would you just have stood here, watching?"
Her voice was low. She was shaking all over. Carl had been watching all the time. It was impossible. And now he stood quite calmly, not at all embarrassed.
"I would have pulled you out,"
Carl said. He folded his arms. His sleeves were rolled up. His arms were big and bare, furred with reddish fur.
"I don't understand. What are you doing here?"
She was nettled and puzzled. Her head ached. Down the back of her neck, the slimy water still dripped.
"Why were you watching me? What's the matter with you?"
Early that morning, the sun had wakened Carl out of his usual deep sleep. He opened his eyes, blinking at the sunlight pouring through the window. He reached up and pulled the shade back. Sunlight burst into the room, streaming over everything, across his bed, across the floor, onto the dresser and the chair with Vern's clothes piled on it. Vern stirred in his bed, opening his eyes.
"For God's sake, let the shade down."
He turned over, pulling the covers up around him. Carl was sitting up in bed, gazing out the window. He could see buildings and machinery, and gravel paths running here and there, back and forth between the buildings. Beyond the buildings were the hills and the woods, and beyond that were the mountains, blue and cold.
"Will you let the shade down?"
Vern muttered from under the covers.
"Sorry."
Carl let the shade back in place. He slid out of the bed and onto the floor. The floor was warm where the sunlight had touched it. He began to dress, climbing into his clothes, whistling under his breath.
"What's going on?"
Vern raised his head, peering out from under the covers. He felt around on the floor and found his glasses.
"What the hell time is it?"
He put his glasses on and examined the clock.
7:30, my God!
"It's a wonderful day,"
Vern grunted, turning toward the wall.
"If you're going back to sleep, you should take off your glasses,"
Carl said.
"Otherwise they might break."
Vern did not answer. Carl held out his hand.
"Give them to me and I'll put them under the bed for you."
Presently, Vern's hand came out, holding onto the glasses. Carl took them and laid them carefully on the floor.
"They're right by the bed. Just reach over when you want them. I'm going out for a stroll. I'll see you later."
He finished dressing and then trotted down the hall to the bathroom. He washed and cleaned vigorously, combing his blonde hair back into place. Then he stood before the mirror, looking at his reflection.
"Well, Carl Fitter," he said, "what do you have on your mind today?"
His image, blonde and blue-eyed, stared back at him. It was the face of a boy, young and strong and full of great enthusiasm, but still a boy. Carl sighed. When would he look in the mirror and see a man's face? How long would it be? He rubbed his chin. What was lacking? Something was lacking. He had begun to shave. He had been shaving now for several years. His voice had deepened. It was even lower than Vern's. Vern's voice was squeaky. Yet he was still a boy. For all his big shoulders, his good-natured smile, his booming voice, Carl's happiness faded. He gazed at his reflection forlornly, drooping sadly. But after a while, some of his spirits returned. He straightened up. Someday it would change. Someday it would be different. There would be a flash of fire, a burst of white flame from heaven, and there he would be, a man. Carl walked down the stairs to the ground floor and outside onto the porch. He leaped from the porch onto the gravel path, scattering gravel into the grass and bushes that grew around the side of the building. In the early morning sunlight, the grass was still wet with tiny beads of moisture. They glinted up at him like globes of crystal. Or perhaps they were drops of perspiration, sweated up from the ground during the night. But why should the ground labor during the dark hours? What kind of activity was in progress when the sun had gone and the long shadows were over everything? The activity of growth, of course. The beginnings of life. The first stirrings down in the soil. Tiny things pushing their way up. All this began in the darkness of the night, and when the sun came, the plants were ready to break through the skin of the earth to come out into the heat and warmth. That was the way it was. Life came into being in the dim darkness of night, and the ground perspired from the labor of it. Carl walked gingerly along the gravel walk, feeling the small stones breaking under his shoes. Everything seemed wonderful on a day like this. The world was full of wild and exciting objects. What he crushed under his feet might be rough diamonds, diamonds that had not been stolen from the stone yet, diamonds that were still dark and coated with the dirt and grime in which they'd lain for centuries. A road of breaking diamonds, shattering under his shoes. He increased his pace, kicking the gravel as he went, sending waves of stones flying up into the air. There was mica in the gravel, and the sun caught the bits of mica and made them sparkle. Carl laughed in excited wonder. Maybe he was right. Maybe there were precious stones under him. He entered the commissary. It was cool and deserted. No one had been there since dinner the night before. There was no sound except the tap-tapping of the water as it dripped in the sink. He opened the window above the table and gusts of fresh air came sweeping in, blowing the curtains back and forth. Carl took a deep breath, letting it out slowly. He began to assemble a meal. What did he want? He looked in the refrigerators. There were so many things to choose from. What would it be? He considered. If he were going to do a lot of things, he would need a big meal. What was he going to be doing? Today he would wander around. He would go off and walk by himself as far as he could, until he was too tired to walk any farther. He would be alone. Everyone was still sound asleep in bed. There was no time more exciting, no time more strange and wonderful than the early morning, when people were silent and asleep, and he had the great bright world all to himself. This time of morning, before the dew on the lawns dried up, before the bees began to come out, when his footsteps echoed among the buildings, this was his favorite time. Then, the world was entirely his personal property. There was no one to dispute his ownership, to try to inhabit it or take it away from him. Everyone was turned to stone, the people quiet and immobile in their beds, enchanted by magic. He only could walk about and inspect the world, his land, his buildings, his silent stone people. Thinking of this, Carl turned the fire on under the frying pan and began to lay strips of bacon into it. He got eggs and milk from the refrigerator, humming to himself as he worked. When he had finished eating, he carried the dishes to the sink and carefully stacked them up. Then he left the building, going back out of doors again. The day was still bright, but it was not so cool now. Time had passed. It was later. Subtle changes were already coming over the day. Carl started up the road, his hands in his pockets, whistling to himself. Presently he began to sing, not loudly, but in a deep, low voice, like a concert baritone. It all had a strange effect on him, the warm, motionless day. The unmoving buildings and trees and bushes, it made him foolish. But he did not care. He could be as foolish as he wanted. No one could stop him. And after all, it was his morning, his day, his world. Everything belonged to him. He glanced up at the women's dorm as he passed by it. The shades were all down. He smiled to himself. Barbara was asleep. Vern and Barbara, sound asleep in their beds. And down below them, in the warm sunlight, he moved happily through his great warm world, completely alone. He left the buildings behind him, whistling and skipping along. It was just as he was passing the last of the slag piles that he came across it. He stopped, frozen. His whistle died on his lips. At first he did not know what it was. Was it something a person had dropped? It looked like a little bag, or a wallet, or something wrapped up. He bent down. It was a bird, a red-breasted robin. The robin was lying on its side, its feet sticking out. It was stiff and rigid, dead. And already a line of busy ants were moving back and forth from it to the weeds. Carl stood for a long time, staring down. The bird had died during the night. Sometime in the night, when the ground was generating new life, the already living had passed away, without any sound, without attracting any attention. The bird might have been flying over the road. It must have sunk lower and lower until at last it was hobbling across the ground, flying a few feet, then running and falling, until at last it had fluttered against the gravel in a bouncing heap. After a few feeble thrashings and struggles, it had become inert, staring with its beady eyes, its chest rising and falling. And in the first hours of sunrise, the bright eyes had dimmed over. The bird had died, quietly, by itself, with no one around to see. This was what happened to all the things that came out of the wet earth, out of the filthy slime and mold. All things that lived, big and little, they appeared, struggling out of the sticky wetness, and then, after a time, they died. Carl looked up at the day again, at the sunlight and the hills. It did not look the same now as it had looked a few moments before. Perhaps he saw it more clearly than he had a moment ago. The sky, blue and pure, stretched out as far as the eye could see. But blood and feathers came from the sky. The sky was beautiful when he stood a long way off from it, but when he saw it too closely, it was not pretty. It was ugly and bitter. The sky was held together with tacks and gum and sticky tape. It cracked and was mended, cracked and was mended again. It crumbled and sagged, rotted and swayed in the wind, and like the sky in the children's story, part of it fell to earth. Carl walked on slowly. He stepped off the road and climbed a narrow dirt ridge. Soon he was going up the side of a grassy slope, breathing deeply and taking big steps. He stopped for a moment, turning to look back. Already the company and its property had become small, down below him. Shrunk, dwindling away. Carl sat down on a rock. The world was quiet and still around him. Nothing stirred. His world, his silent, personal world. But he did not understand it. So how could it be his world? He had come out to smile at the flowers and grass, but he had found something more, something that he could not smile at, something that was not pleasant at all, something that he did not like, nor understand, nor want. So it was not his world. If it were his world, he would have made it differently. It had been put together wrong, very much wrong. Put together in ways that he could not approve of. The silent bird, lying in the road, it reminded him of something. His thoughts wandered. What did it remind him of? A strange feeling drifted through him. This had happened before, this very thing. He had gone out and found something terrible, something that did not make sense, something he could not explain or understand. After a while, he remembered. The cat, the dying old cat. With its broken ears, one eye gone, its body thin and dry with patches of loose hair. The cat and the bird. Other things. Flies buzzing around, streams of ants, things dying, disappearing silently, drifting away, with no one to watch or care. He had never understood it, this thing that he found in the great warm world. It had no meaning, no sense. Was there some purpose, some reason? When he understood the cat was dead, he had gone back inside the house, walking slowly, deep in thought. Back inside, to his room, his things, his microscope, his stamps and maps and drawings and books. They had meaning, purpose. Their existence had reason to it. He could look at them and understand them. Carl sat on the hillside, thinking about his childhood. It was not so long ago, not so very many years in the past. He could feel the memories rising up around him, seeping up on all sides of him. Sights, smells, tastes. His past was very much with him. It was close, just below the surface, waiting to come up. His room, his microscope, the drawings he had made. He sat and remembered about them.